And it's Wednesday at 4:02. Thanks for listening to Out There today. Thanks for listening to Valley Free Radio. I'm your host for Out There, Ruthie Woodring, every Wednesday from 4 until 5. I'm still a little lost without my regular promo with Fats Domino singing Rockin' Bicycle, but it's on a thumb drive that's still in police custody. That story will come out in time. Okay, so for today's show, well, I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm going to talk for a bit about my thoughts and observations. We'll start with this one. It was a few minutes of me talking as a trash hauler when I was doing my pedal people trash hauling routes today. I was hauling trash earlier today, downtown trash, emptying hundreds of pounds of trash, and just seeing all the waste. I was just thinking about where the resources come from and then where they go. And just thinking, like, if people really knew what it takes to manufacture an item, to get it to our stores and to our homes, if they really knew all that goes into that and how that impacts people around the world, and if they really knew when they throw it in a trash can, then what happens to it? Where does it go? How does it affect life on the planet? If people really knew, then they would change. We wouldn't keep doing the same things out of convenience. We would work harder to find alternatives to single-use cups and bottles and things like that. We would work harder to find ways to repair something, even though it might cost more than buying a new one. If only people knew, I was thinking. And then later in my morning, now I'm doing some other trash pickups. And I was actually reading Lois Aaron's letter to the editor about prisons, the prison system in Massachusetts, and how Massachusetts isn't as progressive as we think it is. And I was thinking about how all the information is out there. We have access to know so much. We don't need any more information. What we need now is love. And that got me to thinking about how, like, hauling trash, you see patterns, consumption patterns in people's lives over the years sometimes. And sometimes you can see, I mean, this is my judgment and interpretation, but separate from being a trash hauler, just being a human being in our culture, yeah, separate from being a trash hauler, you can see how people try and fill the longing for love with stuff. We don't need any more information. We just need to love each other and not admire the stuff. Love each other with time and attention, not with gifts of more stuff. I think we need to learn how to express our love in ways that don't involve, you guessed it, stuff.
Okay, so I'm going to transition from that. That makes me think of my housemate, business partner, etc., Alex Jarrett. He got married. He and Sarah Howard got married on Sunday, this past Sunday. And I wanted to read their vows. They're on a honeymoon now, hiking in the White Mountains. But I like their vows. It's kind of, you know, talks about love, what it means to love each other. All right. Today, I'm joyfully making a commitment to wholeheartedly love you for the rest of my life. I promise to cultivate this commitment, to respect and appreciate you, to support you, and to care for you in every way I can. I acknowledge and welcome the joining of our birth and chosen families and the people to whom we've made lifetime commitments. I promise to honor your feelings and support you in not letting the difficult ones hold you back. I will trust you with my vulnerabilities and share them with you freely. I acknowledge oppression in the history of marriage, and I reject it within this marriage. I promise to support you in moving against oppression in all forms and in cultivating community, commitment, compassion, healing, and love, both in this relationship and in the world. I promise to support you in healing and protecting our shared home, the Earth. I promise to believe in you, your abilities, your dreams. I will always hold the understanding of you as a beautiful, whole, and amazing human being. I acknowledge the unknowable, the mystery, the vastness of the future and the universe, and I promise my loving support as we navigate it together. That was Alex Jarrett and Sarah Howard making their wedding vows. They each said that to each other at the ceremony this past Sunday. And then we had a big potluck with about 200 people and one tiny bag of trash. Well, okay, here's Dionne Warwick.
Good evening, it's Don Trewitz with your 5 o'clock, and things
well,
are not
yet
in the financial sector. Wall Street's down, housing market is down, foreclosures across the market. And speaking of Wall Street, protesters are flooding downtown. With the public and government at odds, it's far from any resolution.
What the world is now is love, sweet love.
Ladies and gentlemen, Miss Dionne Warwick.
It's the only thing that there's just too little of. What the world needs now is love, sweet love. Oh, not just for some, but for everyone. Lord, we don't need another mountain. There are mountains and hillsides enough to climb. And there are oceans and rivers enough to cross, enough to last till the end of time. What the world needs now is love, sweet love. It's the only thing that there's just too little love. What the world needs now is love, sweet love. No, not just for some, but for everyone. Love, we don't need another meadow. There are cornfields and wheat fields enough to grow. And there are sunbeams and moonbeams enough to shine. Won't you listen, Lord, if you wanna know.
Just
to love what the world
needs now.
His love, sweet love. What the world needs now is love, sweet love.
You're listening to Out There here on Valley Free Radio. So before the song, I was thinking about, you know, do we need information or do we need love? Of course, we need everything. So there was some love, you know, the wedding vows, the song. Now it's time for more information. And this information is about recycling and plastics recycling. Because see, when I empty the downtown trash barrels, I spend a lot of time picking non-recyclable things, especially cups, out of the trash. So many people are confused by the chasing arrows that you may find on some plastics. The chasing arrows and the numbers, and it might say PETE or HDPE or something like that. So the chasing arrows, those are resin codes, but they don't equal recyclability. The code's misleading. It's not intended to indicate that the plastic's recyclable. It's a code used by the plastics industry to indicate the general type of chemical compound used to make the product. And the codes were adopted by the Society of the Plastics Industry in 1988 to provide an industry-wide standard that would make it easier to identify and sort recyclable plastic. But it was never meant to be a guarantee to consumers that recycling with that code would be accepted in their community. So there's basically only 7 resin codes, 1 through 7, but there's actually thousands of different types of plastics because it'll use different combinations of dyes or additives, all these different things that are added to the basic resin to produce a desired color or shape or texture in the final product. So these variations in the manufacturing process mean that there's different melting points and other properties within the same resin code. And to be made into another product, plastic has to be carefully sorted by type. And combining different types of plastic makes it useless for manufacturing. So those are some of the issues with the resin codes. Whether or not plastic is recyclable also depends on, you know, the shape of it, the sorting, the size of it, whether it's too small to go through the conveyor belts at the sorting place at the MRF, or it's too big, or what else? Just what the market is at that in your time and place. And also, most plastic recycling is just like downcycling it. Like compared to glass, aluminum, or paper, those things can be recycled multiple times. But plastic, it usually ends up in a landfill or incinerator, maybe after like one recycling. So a little about plastic. Okay, now my next information update from the trash hauling world is I was talking with Deb Laser, who is, I don't know her official title, but she works at the DPW for the city of Northampton. She works back at the landfill desk, and she's been there a long time, and she knows everything. So if I got a question, she's the one that I talk to. I was asking her where things go from the Locust Street Transfer Center, the city's transfer center. And here's some of the things. So in addition to the books, clothing, scrap metal, trash, recycling that the city accepts there, there's also things like CFLs, compact fluorescence, that starting July 1st, there's now a $1 charge per bulb to drop them off at Locust Street. And they're taken by a business called Complete Recycling out of Fall River. They take all the mercury products. Oh yeah, that's why it's so important to recycle CFLs, because of the mercury in them. So Complete Recycling takes all the mercury products, and they also take electronics from the landfill, I guess, the Northampton landfill, where I guess some of those things are accepted out there. Also, antifreeze is another thing that's accepted for recycling in a business called Safety Clean takes that by the 55-gallon drum. I'm not sure how much it costs to have that shipped away, but it costs. Also, used motor oil is accepted at the transfer center, and that is burned right there at the DPW in their burner, if it's clean. But if it's got water in it, that'll burn up the burner. Or if it's contaminated, then it goes with the antifreeze as like hazardous waste kind of something or other. And Freon, so Freon, it's reclaimed on site. I think this is out at Glendale Road at the old landfill site. So a company comes and reclaims the Freon from the appliances, and then the city just keeps the appliances as scrap metal. I'm guessing, you know, like fridges or freezers, air conditioners, that kind of thing. And used cooking oil, that's taken by Re-Energizer out of Hatfield. And also the compost at Locust Street Transfer Center, that's taken by 360 Recycling in Westfield, I think. Salvation Army takes the clothes, the trash. I'm not totally positive where the trash is going right now. The recycling goes to the MRF in Springfield, the dual stream MRF, not the single stream MRF. And from there, it goes out to different places. So that's more information if you wanted some information. All right, here's another story of the day I just remembered. So this morning after I did downtown trash, then I was headed to the bike lab to meet someone who needed a bike. And I was going up Bridge Street, and a cyclist passed me on the right, riding on the sidewalk, maybe a boy, maybe 15 or 16. And then across the street on Bridge Street, heading towards like Duffy Tire, heading out towards Hadley Way, there was another cyclist. And I'm pretty sure that she was on the sidewalk too. I wasn't paying too close attention. I was going to turn into Elizabeth Street. Anyway, the next thing I knew, the cyclist on the left was suddenly in the middle of the road on Elizabeth Street at the intersection, and there was a car that came to a screeching stop. She was just, I think she was riding up the sidewalk crossing Elizabeth Street at the intersection, and a motorist pulled out to turn onto Bridge Street. So I went over. The cyclist was laying down on the ground, but she was okay. I mean, mostly okay. She was really shaken up, and she didn't move for a long time. In fact, she lay there on the ground until the police and the ambulance came. She was responsive and everything. And there was a neighbor that came over. So I parked the bike and trailer to keep, to sort of block the street, to block traffic until the police came. And then I was talking with the driver and talking with the woman a little bit, and I have this traffic conflict card that I always ride my bike with. And it's really helpful because it asks for like the motorist name and license plate number, contact information, all that. Because, you know, if you're hit by a car or if you're in an accident, it rattles you, and you can't think straight. So having a cue sheet could be helpful. Anyway, so I was talking with them, and then a neighbor came over too, and she called the police and the ambulance, whatever. But as we were waiting for them, the woman that was lying on the ground next to her bike, she didn't seem physically that hurt. It was hard to tell when the impact first happens. She said her leg hurt, but she was really like rattled emotionally. And when the neighbor who just like squatted down next to her and asked her, "Is it okay if I put my hand on your shoulder?" And the woman on the ground was like, "Yeah." And so then the neighbor woman like just put her hand on her shoulder, and you could see the woman on the ground. She just like she felt this like sort of safe place to emotionally release a little bit of the shock in that moment. It was a moment. So anyway, motorists, be sure you look both ways before you pull out. Cyclist, it's safer to not ride on the sidewalk, especially if you're on the wrong side of the road. If you do have to ride on the sidewalk, or like if kids are riding on the sidewalk, you're supposed to ride on the right side of the on the right sidewalk, like with traffic, as compared to the left sidewalk against traffic. That helps with visibility a little bit. All right. You're listening to Out There here on Valley Free Radio. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. Here's some Mikey Spice. I just like the sound of this guy's voice. I heard this song when I was in Trinidad back in the winter. It's a Neil Diamond cover.
LA's fine sunshine most of the time, and the feeling is laid back. Palm tree grove, rent so low, don't you know? But I keep working my way back. But I'm a Jamaican boy who's born and raised. Nowadays I'm lost between two shores. LA's fine, but it ain't home. New York's home, but it ain't mine no more. I am myself to no one there.
That was Mikey Spice. You're listening to Out There on you're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. This is WXOJLP 103.3 FM in Northampton, Massachusetts. I've got some announcements. Coming up, registration and sponsorship opportunities are now open for the All Out Adventures annual kayakathon, which will be held on Sunday, September 22nd, 2019. Last year, the event raised close to $30,000, and the goal this year is to raise $50,000. So the event consists of a colorful flotilla of kayaks, canoes, and stand-up paddle boards that will paddle down the Connecticut River from Sunderland to Northampton to raise awareness and funds for inclusive outdoor recreation programming for people of all abilities. Following the event are over 150 participants, volunteers, family, and friends. Join us for a fun cookout hosted by Berkshire Healthcare Systems in Northampton. You can go to the alloutadventures.org website for more information. This announcement caught my eye because I have scheduled an interview scheduled for next week for my show for next week with Jackie Brown, who is a bike mechanic for All Out Adventures. So hopefully we can talk a little bit more about that next week and other things All Out Adventures is up to. Also coming up, what's today? Wednesday. On Friday and ongoing Fridays during the summer, there's a summer park series of live music and dancing in Pulaski Park and downtown Northampton. This Friday is Sunburned Hand of the Man. This says 4 p.m. Okay. And one more announcement I'd like to mention before we go back to whatever we're going back to. Oh, an interview with the Pulaski Park Weeders. That's what we're going to have next. But one more announcement. This is coming up on July 6th. Speakers from the LGBT Asylum Task Force will discuss their experiences in a free program in Greenfield. This is Saturday morning, July 6th. Racial Justice Rising and LGBT Asylum Task Force will present this program open to the public at the First Congregational Church on Silver Street, 43 Silver Street in Greenfield, from 10:15 a.m. to 12:15 p.m. For more information or to reserve free childcare, contact email at racialjusticerising.org. Racial Justice Rising, based in Franklin County, offers a free program one Saturday morning most months and are also known for their weekly Saturday morning vigil for racial justice on Greenfield's Town Common. All right, now I want to play a little interview with Paige Bridgens and Peggy McLeod, who I ran into yesterday when I was emptying trash barrels in Pulaski Park in downtown Northampton. Yeah, well, I just came to check in and see how things are going in the park with the pollinator garden.
We have some nice volunteers. We're going to...
Volunteer plants or people?
Plants.
Yeah.
Oh, we have both.
What do we have here?
The butterfly weed is doing great, that orange flower over there. We have this huge, over to the left, a huge bunch of those.
Oh, yeah.
So we're probably going to see quite a few monarchs this year. Kathy Katz from That's a Plenty Farm told me that they actually kept a record of when the first monarchs come to lay eggs, and it's like the 27th of June.
Oh, wow.
I was panicking because I hadn't seen any, and she goes, no, don't worry, it's kind of late June, the first returnees that lay eggs.
And where are they returning from?
Mexico.
Okay. Land of the monarch.
I think I've been seeing some.
Yes, a few.
You've seen mm-hmm. here in the park?
Not so much here in the park, but in Williamsburg, where I garden, I've been seeing some. And I've been seeing them land on the Asclepias mm-hmm. and thinking this year to try to watch and see the eggs. Yeah. You know?
I just read an article that said, I did not read the report, it said scientists are learning that monarchs raised in captivity have a hard time, what is it called, when I fly to Mexico?
Migrating.
Uh-huh. But I'm thinking they mean the ones that they do en masse and send them to kindergartners.
Uh-huh.
You know, because they're raised somewhere and then they're mailed.
Well,
so
well.
That. But we try to release them immediately when we have them.
Yeah. Paige, what, so... This is the
pollinator garden?
Yes, this is a pollinator garden. So what was it, 3 or 4 years ago that the city, this park, got redesigned, Pulaski Park. And this rain garden was part of the redesign. And it takes water from the street and passes it slowly through this, through the park, and infiltrates. And then what doesn't infiltrate flows down further south, down that
eventually
slope.
Eventually down to the roundhouse.
Yes, that area.
Yeah, that filters through these rocks and plantings. And,
yes, and so these rocks at the bottom are where the water flows. And, you know, it's the stones and a little bit of vegetation slow the flow of the water. Not that the water's going to be speeding along or anything. So that creates conditions of some moisture. But then there are dry times, mm-hmm. like what we're in right now.
So the plants that are chosen have to be able to withstand wet feet and dry feet.
Uh-huh.
And some of them didn't make it through a couple of winters that were originally put here. And we had a volunteer pro bono designer, Owen Wormser, gather some plants from various places. And we had, last November, we had 25 people in a cold day planting several hundred plants. And it looks like good survival rate over the winter.
Mm-hmm. I think so, yeah. And the other thing about a rain garden is that, you know, they're different. The elevation is really different. So mm-hmm. the plants down here need to be able to withstand quite a, you know, being possibly being inundated, while the ones further up the slope need to be able to tolerate, you know, warmer conditions.
Yeah.
I mean, drier.
Yeah.
Drier conditions. So it's kind of cool.
So what motivates each of you to be out here today?
We really want to have access to city parks, and we can't just make work for the maintenance crews. So it's fun weeding. Everyone likes weeding. You get lots of feedback that it looks good. And then we're trying to set up more parks with pollinator plants. And somebody has to weed. It isn't on everybody's job description that works for DPW.
Uh-huh.
So we create piles of weeds. We have maybe 15 occasional people on our volunteer list that will show up when we uh-huh. announce something.
Uh-huh.
And hopefully over time we'll see more and more pollinators. And bringing more pollinators into city brings more birds.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, you're creating a wildlife area. It's enjoyable.
Yeah,
we
you know,
have a lot of work.
Yeah, it's a lot of weeding to be done. I don't want to stop you from weeding. You know, one of the things I like about working downtown, or weeding or pulling trash or pulling weeds, is that it's just a nice way to hang out in the public space,
exactly.
in the park, and be social, and not, it's not about shopping.
So
you're still supporting your community.
Shopping for pollinators.
How about you, Paige? Anything else you want to? What motivates you to be out here?
I really love coming and hanging out in the park, and people come by and have questions and thoughts
and visits.
Just, you know, just getting the chance to see folks and just went over to the Juneberry over there and got to tell the gals who were sitting on a bench that, hey, you know that this is fruiting and, you know, you can pick this fruit. You know, it's available. And then that guy goes by. He's got his little boom box.
Yeah, we're getting serenaded.
Yeah.
Now, it's kind of catching on because the senior center and the Forbes Library now have different volunteer designers that are, you know, they're professionals normally, and they're going to be designing new pollinator gardens in those facilities. So we're kind of creating a pathway of pollinators throughout Northampton.
So the butterflies and hummingbirds and bees and stuff don't have to go too far between meals.
Yeah. And backyards are good places too, but we're doing municipal.
Right. And I'm excited that the city is experimenting with a different paradigm of landscaping.
Mm-hmm.
We're emerging from a period of time, and we're actually still in it, in which the land is seen as a place to just trash with lawn mowing. And I mean, I don't mean to be harsh or anything, but a vast amount of land is in lawns. And a lot of it is just because this is what we grew up with. It's what we knew. And so it's what's familiar. And I like that, Ruthie. You're leaving some of the weeds right there. Some of them are going to seed, and they're kind of getting a little expansive. So
the more people we get involved, we hope to change the aesthetic into not quite so neat and tidy and like a food desert for pollinators.
Yeah.
But, you know, hey, great, look at that clover in that lawn over there. Look at the bees foraging. And I think the city is becoming more willing to embrace that, and we're helping with the transition.
Well, thanks so much for being out here. Anything else anybody wants to say?
Retirees, if you're interested, call WMassBees.org. Find out what's happening.
How often are people out here if someone wants to join up to pull weeds with someone?
You know, it's erratic, but Paige and I and another woman, Jessica, check now and again to see what's happening. And we're in the growth season, so probably at least once a week. But it could be more like once or twice a week because everyone can't come on the same day.
And it's just scheduled as it meets. It's not like a regular time, just as people are able.
Yes. Right. Uh-huh.
So, WMassBees.org?
.org. Thank you.
All right.
The other day, I met a guy who stops by here every day and picks out the cigarette butts and puts them in the trash over there and just does that one small but very important task. Uh-huh. It's so great.
So cigarette butts are pretty small. Why are they a problem?
They are. I think there's fiberglass in those filters, and it's trash. And I mean, they're kind of gross.
Well, yeah, the plasticky. It's not biodegradable.
It's not biodegradable, and so we're just really grateful to this guy. His name is Al. I don't know his last name, but. His name is Al, and he comes every day and picks out the butts.
Nice.
Thank you, Al.
That was an interview with Paige Bridgens and Peggy McLeod, who were pulling weeds in the pollinator garden, rain garden of Pulaski Park yesterday morning. You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring, and here's some chronics.
The pressures of your life and it tough. No stay down, mama, time pick it up. Now bother with the down, full style, strictly up, full vibes. Now pick it up when the bills, them, the rent and the mortgage due. Yeah. When me chalice, when your best friends are gone and it's only you. Yeah. Like a past lift, turn up the music. Skanking swing, everybody wanna feel like free. Forget your troubles and your feel a reggae music, sweetie, yeah, yeah. together. So make we sing together. And who said life no order? And every man got this struggle. I beg you to help me, Lord. And let me overcome my troubles. Skanking sweet, yeah. Everybody wanna feel ivory. Forget your troubles and the rock with me. You know, feel a reggae music sweet, yeah, yeah. Skanking sweet. Everybody wanna feel ivory. Forget your troubles and the rock with me. You know, feel a reggae music sweet, yeah. We skanking sweet. We skanking till the morning come. Until the day when my troubles are gone. Hallelujah. And we're grooving in a jaja. We're grooving all my troubles away.
So today is July 3rd, Wednesday, July 3rd. That means tomorrow is July 4th. Which means that downtown in front of the courthouse will be the annual naturalization ceremony of people becoming U.S. citizens. I think that's at 11 o'clock tomorrow morning, Thursday morning, July 4th. And I'm going to read a little excerpt from a conversation with Peter Linebaugh, who is a historian and author. About a little bit about the history of Independence Day. And this is from an interview with Jaisal Noor of Real News Network. And so Linebaugh reminds us that, you know, at the time of the Declaration of Independence, it wasn't the United States then, it was these 13 colonies in revolt against Great Britain. So like on the one side, it's the struggle of freedom against monarchy, the struggle of the notion of a republic against monarchy. And that's the principal theme of the Declaration of Independence. Linebaugh says, I would suggest that people reread the Declaration of Independence because they'll find 28 reasons for declaring independence from Great Britain. And these reasons reflect, quote, a long train of abuses and usurpations or takeovers, end quote. To use Thomas Jefferson's language in the Declaration of Independence. And I think one of the most important of these grievances was that the King of England had opposed conditions for new appropriation of land. This is the seventh of 28 different reasons for declaring independence. And what that meant was that these settlers from Europe wanted to appropriate lands belonging to the Indians, belonging to different Native American peoples, the Wadanusani people, a confederation in New York, the Cherokee people of what's now Tennessee and the Carolinas, the Potawatomi in Michigan and Ohio. The settlers wanted these lands, but Great Britain, as a result of the Seven Years' War, had said that these lands were off limits to settlement. This was part of the Treaty of Paris of 1763, So here's one of the lesser known reasons for declaring independence. That is, that the settlers couldn't take as much land as they wanted. On that same theme of wars against Native Americans, the 28th reason given is really misleading. It claims that the King of England, George III, and his ministry and parliament had caused the inhabitants of, quote, our frontiers, this is a whole quote, our frontiers, the merciless Indian savages whose known rule of warfare is an undistinguished destruction of all ages, sexes, and conditions, end of the quote. So this was kind of like a jihad or a crusade, because that's precisely what Thomas Jefferson claims of the Native Americans. It's exactly what will happen to them as a result of the Declaration of Independence. That is, that the wars against Great Britain led to a merciless destruction, in New York particularly, of Sullivan's Raid of 1779, of the orchards, the cornfields, the senior citizens, the men and the women of the Wodenosaunee people of the Confederation in New York. It's not to say that the British weren't necessarily against expanding and taking more of the natives' land. It was just getting too expensive for them, because they had spent an enormous amount of money fighting the French in the French and Indian War, as well as, well, and so they'd been taxing the colonists, which that caused a great protest. Anyway, so that is a little excerpt from a conversation with Peter Linebaugh. This is from news piece, I think, called The Untold History of Independence Day, that's on the Real News Network. You're listening to Author on Valley Free Radio. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. Stay tuned for Democracy Now! Coming up at 5 o'clock. Here's a one-minute clip from someone I met yesterday in Amherst when I was waiting for the bus to Belchertown.
What's your name?
Colleen Jardine.
All right. And so you've this is crocheting, right?
Yes, it's crocheting. MassHealth and Medicare do not cover orthopedic shoes for people who are disabled and have to wear a brace. So I have to pay for them, which I just found out they're over $400.
Oh my gosh.
So that's why I'm out here trying to sell like a dollar for a set of coffee coasters. But that's what I'm doing. Yeah. And trying to put it in the bank until I get enough money to pay for the shoes.
Have you had any takers?
I had some.
Yeah?
Then I was told by one woman, charge more. And I said, well, if I charge more, they won't want to buy them.
It's hard to know how people react to buying things. Because people aren't rational about it.
A little clip with Colleen. Just to be clear, I'm not rational about buying things either. I include myself in that. People, I am people. Okay, so I got one other little clip here. I'm looking at the clock. It says 4:51. Democracy Now! Comes on at 5. So this is a little clip interview, a three-minute interview with my oldest sister, Jenny Moyer, who's a farmer in southwestern Virginia. And so at my family reunion in Kentucky a few weeks ago, I had asked some different family members about their food sources. Like, where do you get your food? Like, what's, yeah. So this is what Jenny had to say.
You can either ask me by meal, or you can ask me to go through my house and describe my food.
Okay. All right. So, Jenny, yeah, think about what's in your house and what's some of the food there? Where did it come from? What's it like?
Okay. So, if I go into my pantry, I have 5 or 6 gallon buckets of grain that I got from Something Better, Country Life in Michigan, on their truck that goes to North Carolina, comes up back to Michigan. There's jars of canned goods, pickles, pickled beets, beans, cucumbers. There's salsa, ketchup I've made, tomatoes I've made, applesauce I've made, etc.
Yeah, all canned goods in glass jars.
Yes, there are a few, maybe a couple cans of fish around, and maybe some tomato paste around, because it's nice to add a can of tomato sauce. But other than that, there's not much in there that was really bought in bulk. I do have coconut oil that we usually put on breakfast things, and that does have a label on it. And that's about it of my pantry. I go into my kitchen, and my refrigerator, there's not many things with labels on it, except for like soy sauce and fish sauce, maybe some sesame seed oil. Mostly cheese, milk, yogurt. We have cows, so all that I make my own. Of course, all their jars of pickles and whatnot that we eat. Oh, we do buy peanut butter. I forgot about that in the pantry. If I go downstairs in my freezers, I have two freezers that have meat from chickens from our own chickens, pork from our own pig, venison from our own farm, some bear sausage from bear somebody hunted and gave to us, beef from our cows, and fish from here there. Maybe Chinoa, maybe not.
Like home-caught fish from ponds or lakes or rivers?
Yeah, mostly, right. And then I have two freezers that have fruit and vegetables in them, and then miscellaneous other things are off storage.
Yeah, mostly fruits and vegetables that you've grown or friends,
combination. Some of it we've grown. Some of it's from my in-laws. They have from their garden. Some of it is frozen from a guy we sell with at market. He has a lot of vegetables if he has any excess. Or sometimes my husband will bring back okra from market that somebody had excess of and didn't sell, and so I'll freeze it.
Yeah. Or like a case of bananas from the store that are deep discounted because they're overripe or something like that.
Yes, there are some frozen bananas. Frozen peaches that have been left over from market. A lot of things left over from market in there.
Yeah.
Some things that have gotten lost in there.
Yeah.
Got butter in there that I've done. Some excess cheese that's not been aged. I have another refrigerator that's converted into a cheese cave. It's about 52 degrees that I've got aged cheese in. And then I've got a cold room that's mostly produce and has had apples in it most of the year. We still have some apples from last year. So once we'll start eating apples in June, and we'll keep them in the cold room, have apples year-round.
That was my sister, Jenny, who lives in southwestern Virginia. Well, I really can't keep track of how many fridges and freezers and cheese caves and all that she was mentioning. But all that talk about the local produce reminded me that it's mulberry season. There's also some cherries on the trees right now, the sort of ending cherry season, but go eat mulberries. But be careful, because yesterday I was eating mulberries, and I attribute my mulberry eating to my subsequent bike crash. I was riding my bike back from Amherst, and there was a tree by the bike path in Hadley, a mulberry tree. It was dropping mulberries all over the ground, so I stopped, you know, and I was standing in the mulberry squish, picking mulberries out of the tree, and then I got back on my bike and was riding down the bike path. And it was a beautiful summer afternoon, evening. I was having a good time. I had a belly full of mulberries. Maybe I didn't have both hands on the handlebars. Maybe I hit a root bump. I don't really know what happened, except the next thing you know, my slippery sandal soaked with mulberry slime has slipped off my pedal and gets wedged between like my pedal and the ground, and like it's getting dragged along the bike path. I can't get it out because it's wedged in there. Anyway, I went to the side of the bike path rather abruptly and sort of stumbled off into the dirt and got two sandals full of dirt while my bike went down. Anyway, watch out for mulberries. Consume safely. You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. One more announcement. Stay tuned for Democracy Now! Coming up at 5 o'clock. Also, this Saturday and every Saturday is the Bike Lab. Well, almost every Saturday, not always in winter, but the Bike Lab at 12 Northern Avenue in Northampton every Saturday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. You can come and bring your bike, or if you don't have a bike, we have some bikes there that need fixing up that you can leave with if you want a bike. You can learn how to fix your bike. You can just borrow the tools. You can meet people. You can admire Paige's backyard and garden. You can bring donations for the Trinidad Bicycle Osmosis Project that I'm working on. I'm collecting bicycles and bike donations. And I also have a GoFundMe site where I'm collecting money for to pay for the shipping container. And what else about the bike lab? There's spare parts you can scavenge if you just need parts. Or if you just want to learn about your bike, learn about basic maintenance, what do you need to do? Or sometimes people come because they get a free bike off of like Buy Nothing or Craigslist or Freecycle or something. They get a free bike and they're like, what do I do with this bike? Is it safe? And so we can help you do the ABC quick check and basic safety things like that. I'm usually there. Dwayne Rainey is usually there as well. And that's all I got to say. I think we'll go out with a little ABBA. Thanks for listening today.
Chiquitita, tell me what's wrong. You're in shame by your own sorrow. In your eyes, there is no hope for tomorrow. How I hate to see you like this. There is no way you can deny it. I can see that you're all so sad, so quiet.
The views and opinions expressed on WXOJLP are solely those of the original hosts of their respective programs.